This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, your host and editor of myoldmansaid.com and this podcast. Joining me to discuss, it's getting topsy-turvy supporting Villa over the last few weeks, but focusing in this show on what happened at Villa Park against a bunch of bees that looked like they'd been fumigated in the first half. But then it all went nasty and Villa got stung badly. Mr. Chris Bird, Mr. Phil Shaw, welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Cheer up, lads.
No.
Oh, they're in fifth place now. They're in fifth place. They're on the floor. They're bleeding out. They're not believing this negative positivity that they see on social media by some people.
Toxic positivity, you mean?
Negative positivity. I like, because people use that word negative against me all the time when you're just telling the truth.
No, fake. It's not the case of not believing. I think it's lack of trust. I think I'm going to call it right now.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
I do believe, I don't trust.
We're referring to the vibe of, if we'd finish fifth or stroke sixth, if somebody told you we'd finish fifth or sixth this season, you'd bite their hand off. And it's like, yeah, the first person to say that after if we get knocked out by Lille is going to get slapped.
No, I'm going to actually bite their hands off.
Yeah, I'm going to bite their heads off as well.
We won't need them. They're not going to be lifting any trophies.
We're here to finish fourth. Well, Champions League, shall we say. And we're here to win that Europa Conference League. I'm not interested in excuses afterwards. We're here now. And if we bottle the Champions League and the Europa Conference League, then we're bottle jobs. As simple as that. We are the new Spurs.
Oh, God. Let's not put that out into the universe.
But bottling is not in the Villa DNA. We're here old school to win things and accomplish ambitions. So that is the yardstick of how we discuss such matters. And we'll get into the Brentford game later on. We didn't do a main show. We did do a main show. We recorded it, but there was technical difficulties, i.e. the internet my end, because I was actually recording elsewhere in Dublin. So we tried to record it the next day without Phil, and it's just not the same without Phil, is it? So
It needs that touch of Monaco, doesn't it?
I sat down trying to edit it, and I just felt depressed because I couldn't hear Phil Shaw's voice. So anyway, what me and Chris recorded, i.e. covering off the City defeat and the Wolves win, I will put out as a separate catch-up show. So if you wonder why that has suddenly popped out, that is the explanation for that. So it's like a bolt-on, shall we say. Right, before we get into the Bezos, first of all, a word from our sponsors. A service I've personally been using for several years now. NordVPN. With NordVPN, you can switch your IP address to wherever you want to be in the world. So it also helps you access ways of watching those 3 o'clock Saturday games. They subscribe to other packages around the world by resetting your address. Also, the underlining thing is it protects your online browsing and safety. And NordVPN are giving My Old Man Said listeners a special deal, which, as well as big savings, you do get 4 months free as well, plus a 30-day money-back guarantee to try it out. One account can service 6 devices as well, so do check it out at nordvpn.com/MOMS. Moms. So what have you guys been up to?
Been in uncle daycare mode, David. I looked after my two nephews this week, which was a much nicer trip to Manchester than getting thumped 4-1 by City. And went and took them to see Migration, which was very fitting this week as Villa's back four decided to migrate somewhere else.
I think the whole team, we defend as a team, I think they all migrated. Phil Shaw, yeah. Anything exciting?
I'm trying to get a bit of fitness back to try and play some football again myself, which can only go badly wrong. But I don't think I can go as wrong as Villa. At least I know where to stand and how to defend a bit.
Are we going to have to add you to the injury list afterwards?
There's a good possibility.
Is that where you'll be playing, centre-back?
I might end up there, no. But I'll drift back as the tiredness sets in.
Well, personally, I'm just getting ready for the trip to Lille. I'm hoping that game will still be alive after Villa Park. I think we'll need a win there, that's for sure.
Ideally a good one.
Yes, I don't, as you said, Chris, I don't trust this Villa team anymore. Since that...
Not right now.
Since that game at Old Trafford, it's all gone Pete Tong, but we'll get into that later on in the show. First of all, though, let's catch up on some Villa news. As just mentioned, European football returns this week with the first leg of the Europa Conference League quarterfinal against Lille. It's all about coefficient in terms of the league position because, well, it's not over yet. But go back to 1980-81 when in the run-in it looked like Villa had blown their chance at the title, but they managed to creep in over the line. So you never know.
Thanks, Middlesbrough.
More recent title chases, we've bottled it, but we've bottled it a long way out. You know, when we got off the final furlong, that's when we gassed. Here we're not even going for the league anyway, so we don't have to worry about that. But Spurs, next four games, tricky, but you know, I don't care about Spurs really. Villa aren't going to beat Brentford at home after being 2-0 up. They're not going to put themselves in a good position to take advantage of any slip up by Spurs. But Spurs do have a, let's say, a tricky four-game run, but I still think they'll get points from those games. So I think you definitely have to get over 70 points at this stage to have any chance of that fourth spot. But anyway, coefficient in Europe offers a backdoor for Villa or Spurs if they finish in fifth. Tricky, though. I mean, when you read any media coverage, it says England's a big favourite to get that spot, but I'll read out the games. Arsenal versus Bayern, West Ham versus Leverkusen.
Who haven't lost all season.
Then you've got Liverpool at Atalanta, City play Real Madrid. Who are Dortmund playing? Because they're still
alive. Atletico, so that's a tricky one, to be fair.
Yeah, so they're still alive and kicking. And then obviously Villa will do themselves a favour if they beat Lille. That's another...
Yep.
That's a 50-50, I would probably say, despite...
At the moment.
The 3-1 squad spend that Villa are probably having their favour.
Well, Lille had a 3-1 win over Marseille, didn't they? Who were big rivals of theirs at the weekend.
Yeah, but we'll talk about that more in the forthcoming Europa Vision. Meanwhile, in the league, I was telling you this earlier on. The last thing I saw on social media before I left for Villa Park, for Villa versus Brentford, was Douglas Luiz staring at himself in the mirror on Instagram, trying to be Mr. Cool. And I just thought, what a douchebag. funny enough, that was the last thing I thought when I left Villa Park after he picked up his... I mean, there's two school of thoughts as what I was thinking, what a douchebag, when he literally picked it up with like 10 seconds to go. I mean, it was ridiculous. Some people saying Emery should have subbed him, but I think as professional footballers, you don't panic. It's more of a fan thing. When a player picks up a yellow card in like the first 10 minutes, they start to panic, don't they? Oh, he's going to get sent off. He's going to get sent off. Very rarely somebody who picks up a yellow card gets sent off. It's more when they get a yellow. Yellow cards seem to come in quick succession more so because, you know, there's a red mist or something.
Or high pressure period of the game, which caused Villa ruin.
Yeah, but so there's that, you know, the school of thought Emery should have subbed him, but I think it's up to the player there. It's like you're in the final seconds, for God's sake, you know what happens. And you could tell, you know, he put shirt over his head and it was a kind of a needless one. Anyway, he'll miss the next two games. Great.
Cheers for that, Doug.
Meanwhile, always conversations about the lack of atmosphere at Villa Park. A bunch of guys, it's been in the works for a little while now, have been looking to do something beyond just getting flags made and then having pictures of them on Twitter, which isn't adding to the atmosphere. It's footfall, isn't it, on the ground, actually creating an atmosphere. That is the hardest thing to do because, A, now we all sit in seats. So it's in terraces, you could get a group of people together and you could all move to a section and get something going. You know, back in the day, easier. Now, to get people together, it's bloody hard. And, you know, if they do get together, then there'll be people complaining in whatever section they're in. We almost had a singing section back in the Tim Sherwood days, and it was going to be L8/9, but the club didn't actually communicate that properly to season ticket holders, for example, who were sitting in there. So that all kicked off when that happened. And better communicated, that could have been the start of something. But anyway, the 1897 group are starting in earnest to do something about this. It's a case of good luck in two ways. It's like good luck, as in good luck, and then it's also good luck with that, because it's not going to be easy. I've been monitoring this for years now, and I used to speak to Spirit of Shankly and the boys who did the flags on the cop. You know, essentially, how do you get away with it? And it's not just like, you know, this is what we've always done. It was a battle for them. And, you know, I've spoken to other supporter groups like Newcastle Watford, who put on great displays as well. So I've got a kind of inkling of how they do it. But it's a patient process, but also you need a can-do attitude by the club. And in terms of having a can-do attitude, they always say no first to pretty much everything or anything. I mean, I know that from...
Unless they can make money from it.
I know that from experience, but, you know, you got to start somewhere. They had a meeting with the club, and the club have actually agreed for the Bournemouth game to give them the upper tier... I think it's P9 of the upper Doug Ellis, which is normally away fans, but because Bournemouth, like Brentford, don't bring the numbers in terms of away, that gives the club bonus free seats to sell to home fans. So what they're doing is giving them 100 spots that members of that group can migrate to. If you check out their Twitter address, you'll find there's a form. I'm going to probably put it in a newsletter I'm going to put out. So you can migrate and join them. 100 people up there. I don't think you're going to hear them, but you know, it's like the Spartans. You've got to fight your battles, haven't you? Mm-hmm. And you've got to start somewhere. But also, if you're up there, I mean, if you listen to the show and you happen to be in P9 because you're buying late tickets or whatever, it was the home fans in the upper section against Brentford, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it was above them.
And that was one of the first uses of rail seating. And even though it's called rail seating, the first moniker was safe standing, but everybody was sitting down. I mean, there was a great opportunity.
Yeah, so you could see the rails, which is weird.
Yeah, that was an opportunity to baptise that section. So if you're up there and the 1897 group are in there, join in and stand up, because that's how this becomes a success and makes, you know, the club notice it more. Is everybody joins in, and there's actually a few hundred up there, fans making a noise rather than just 100, which gets lost.
Well, then it becomes something the club feel that the need to kind of start accommodating in potentially the Holt End or other areas.
Yeah, so do join in there, and good luck to the 1897 group. Under 21s were knocked out the Premier League Cup by Spurs at Bodymore Heath. Phil, what's that tournament you talk about I can't be bothered with?
The Birmingham Senior Cup.
Yes, what about it?
We're going to play Coventry at Villa Park.
Who is?
The under 21s.
Is this the game that you're playing in?
No.
It's a secret.
You're one of the three overage players.
They said
players.
We need someone to finally replace Carney Chukwueze.
Oh.
Yeah, you're one of the three over 21 players they can use. This would explain you coming out of retirement to finally get your dream of playing in the Birmingham Senior Cup.
I'm a bit more Grant Holt, unfortunately.
Right, 3 points. Now, I haven't deep dived into this, but point number one is the luxury tax, not point deductions, that the Premier League are mulling over. Now, is this just a way of not the whole Premier League shit in the bed when they realise that they have to at least relegate Manchester City for these 115 charges? Because luxury tax is essentially financial fines, isn't it? Which Manchester City will just laugh at.
Yep. See, there is a lot of cynical and sinister sort of motives behind this. I mean, the luxury tax would go into a pot that would then be redistributed among the Premier League clubs that had followed the rules, which that's a bit strange in its own way. And then, but the main thing that's been mooted here is the fear is that the current profit and sustainability rules will stop Premier League clubs attracting top talent and paying the salaries. So then they wouldn't be the big dogs as far as world football goes and bringing in the talent. So yeah. It's sort of like self-protecting.
Yeah, well, we'll see how that one goes out. But I'd be appalled if Manchester City don't get hit with any points or, you know, serious punishment. Because anything financial, they just laugh at. Point number two. This is all because I visited their stadium in pre-season. I've completely changed the outlook of the team, and they've won their first trophy since 40 years. I'm talking about Athletic Bilbao, who lifted the Copa del Rey after a 40-year wait. I think, is it only Barcelona that have actually won more Copa del Rey's than Bilbao? I mean, Bilbao won a load of them back in the day, obviously.
A long time ago.
I did a stadium tour there, and pretty impressive, actually. And I like the setup there. And the history museum's very interesting as well.
I love the identity of that club. I think they're great.
Yeah.
Really unique.
The whole idea of just having Basque players. Admittedly, though, I did want Mallorca to win. And it ended at 1-1, and Athletic won on 4-2 on penalties. I mean, crazy scenes. They sold out their home stadium. I mean, it's played in Seville, but Bilbao sold out the stadium that I visited. Is that 53,000?
Yeah, for a screening.
Just
yeah.
To watch the games on giant TV screens on the pitch. And they're not that, they don't look that big, do they, when you're in the stands at the top?
Don't be giving Chris Heck any ideas of if they'll get to the conference final.
But yeah, if check out video, it's quite interesting of all the fans packed out stadium, 53,000, well watching out. Television. It's pretty full on, and it's, you know, the atmosphere is fantastic. Point number three. This is an interesting one for Villa fans, because Adidas are kit suppliers next season, and they have knocked out the latest batch of kit designs for the Euros, and they've done Germany's shirts, but they're not selling the number 44. They've had to change it over concerns that the number 44, because of the font they've used, resembles the SS symbol the Nazis used back in the day. It's like two lightning bolts, if you remember that.
Talk about not knowing your history.
Well, they probably do, because the Adidas founders, Rudi and Adi Dassler, were actually members of the Nazi Party, joining in 1933, the same year Hitler became Chancellor.
Well, and they provided kits to Hitler Youth, didn't they, as well?
Yeah. Adidas have ran out quickly to say that the company is committed to opposing xenophobia, anti-Semitism, violence and hatred in every form. There's no need for these statements if you actually do your work properly.
Ridiculous, isn't it? And they're about to lose the contract for the German team anyway, aren't they?
But anyway, never mind the Germans. What about old Boubacar Kamara next season?
He's lucky he's going to be out till October, isn't he? As things stand.
Yeah, well, at least it'll give us time to actually really analyse what 44 looks in the font for next season. Or it actually gives him a chance to change his number.
Hmm. Hopefully they change things a bit quicker than Castore.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. When you leave it to the professionals, Phil...
Mm.
These things happen, like, as we were told in that no consultation on the new Villa badge, because we're going to leave it to the professionals this time. It's professionals that you end up with an SS symbol on your bloody kit.
It's laughable, isn't it?
It is. Maybe it was a kind of a swan song, because they've lost it, haven't they?
Yeah, in 2027 it changes to Nike, so they've Adidas have made the German national team kit since the 50s.
Yeah. Alas, no more. They've had to get out of the way because of the manufacturing plants are now needed for Aston Villa. I think that's what this is all about, surely. Anyway. Let's talk about Brentford.
Oh, God.
Right, well, we know the preface of this. It's essentially, you look at the fixture list, you go, oh, we've got some toughies, but we've got home games against Brentford, Bournemouth, Chelsea. That's going to be tough because
they're looking
better. I still think Chelsea are a team for the future, and this is all about their learning curve, because, you know, I saw enough in that FA Cup game when they came to Villa Park and just actively wanted it more to suggest if we're not at the races, we're not beating them. So you got to take care of these home games because Spurs have got some tough games themselves coming up. So you've got to put yourself in a position to take advantage of any slip-ups here. All good in theory. Now, we've spoken on the show about rotating the defence constantly against men, because you need to build understandings in the back four. It's almost, especially in terms of the centre-back partnership when it comes to marking. Now, again, against City, Torres was supposedly rested. Longley was put in, so he was alongside Carlos. So this time we reverted back to a back four that kept a clean sheet against Manchester City and Arsenal. But I would say a lot of that was down to Kamara as well being in there. Now, Kamara, we'll get into the discussion about his influence, but he was playing with that back four. But that back four, you're thinking that would be on paper our best back four defensively. Because, I mean, I noticed Konsa, he doesn't, like in the opponent's third, he doesn't crack on like Cash does. He doesn't drive like an attacking, but, you know, that's because he's a centre-back by nature. So you do get a bit more of a conservative fullback when Konsa's playing, but defensively, he should help. So you that back think. Four on paper is your would be your first choice back four, defensively, if you were under the cosh, shall we say.
Yeah.
But still, you need familiarity. And
we haven't had it all season, really.
No.
Chopping and changing, and the downfall is vulnerability, and the big major thing is positional sense, because you play as a team, as a back line, and that has to get to the point where it's telepathic, and this is a problem that we're encountering. But anyway, more of that later. The big headlines news was the three irreplaceables were in the team, so bullish. As soon as that team sheet came out, you thought, right, okay, we can put this one in the bank, because Brentford have had issues and they still have issues in their defensive lineup. So if we get at them, I mean, they're going to play a low block. That's pretty obvious. Not think it would be that low, though. It was like on the edge of the 6-yard box.
Two banks of four, and then they couldn't retreat any further without being on the pitch.
And especially when you've seen Ivan Toney on the bench as well for Brentford, you're thinking to yourself, right, all signs point towards Villa having a go here.
And you're thinking, we probably won't need a defence in this game.
Well, it didn't for long periods.
Yeah, initially, it was a frustrating watch, wasn't it? Because of how
very boring
Brentford set up. You could see the game plan in terms of shutting Villa down once they got anywhere near, and they were very deep. I mean, the reason I think they left Toney out was to play two players that were fast and direct in their running to hit us on the counter, was to literally suck Villa in as deep as they could and then spring them. And there was a few times where they had an extra man over and the right pass, and we would have been in a world of pain. But I don't think at that stage in the first half they were as clinical in the kind of half-chance breakaways they did have. But it was pretty obvious what they were trying, and it was kind of a race against time. Villa needed to basically put the game away before we were sprung.
Yeah, because the warning sign was there in the first couple of minutes. Reguilon got clean through down the left-hand side. We'll get more on the left-hand side later. And the only person that was back near him was Leon Bailey. And on another day with an even worse referee, you could have seen a penalty given there. Reguilon hits a shot and then Bailey cleans him out afterwards there. So it was a weak penalty shot, and I don't think it was a penalty, but like everything else, you just don't know now.
Yeah, it got to the point of maybe a bit of frustration, a bit of boredom, actually, trying to look for a pass, the final pass, because the final ball was frustratingly going all over the place, wasn't it, at times?
And it's hard to pick your way through any back line, especially when you're moving the ball, I wouldn't say slowly, but there were periods where it was pedestrian, and it becomes quite predictable, and you've got to do something different. You've got to pop it through at pace, or you've got to go round or over or whatever. And strangely, the first time we actually put the ball in the box, we scored.
Yeah, I mean, occasionally, like, Tielemans would do a first-time pass, and that would like, shake it up a bit.
He's good at that.
We weren't doing enough of that. It became, let's say...
Everything was in front of them.
Yeah, and that was exactly where they wanted it.
Yeah, and it seemed to be the only way we could puncture through their press was actually, it would go into Rodgers if he would spin, and he'd carry the ball through. And he had a couple of breaks again, where he carried the ball really well through them, and or occasions where Brentford gave the ball away. Not that they had much of the ball. I think we had about 70-odd% of the possession in the first half.
Yeah. Anyway, the first goal, though,
Well, it's a ball out to McGinn, isn't it, on the right hand side. He cuts in on his left foot, whips it. It's a great ball in, actually, and Watkins is so close. The goalie makes a really good attempt at saving it, but it obviously comes off the post and goes over the line. Bailey puts it in anyway. Weirdly, because barely anybody, including me, really celebrated. We're like,
complete confusion in the stadium. Bizarre. Because you're thinking, hang on a minute, the players aren't really celebrating properly. Is this offside? Has it been? You see the ball eventually go into the net, and you're thinking it must be a goal, but the player's like really bizarre in terms of.
It's almost like he'd blown up.
Yeah, you were like, something going on here, because the players look like it's rolled off for offside or something.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously we all know now it was just a matter of who had actually scored the goal, because.
Yeah.
Because I went, actually, at that moment we scored, and I thought, right, great, 1-0. And I went off, I was fading, so I went to get a coffee. And then by the time I got the coffee, came back to my seat, they showed the replay. It was like, ball over line, goal, Watkins. And I was like, wow, that is how slow it is in the stadium. Is I could literally go off, get a coffee, come back to my seat. And you've just seen the evidence that the goal was for Watkins as opposed to Bailey.
Considering the ref and the fourth official are going to get the vibration, aren't they? They get the alert when it crosses the line anyway. Strange.
Yeah.
But we had to
the officials. It's just perpetually just weird, isn't it? Every game now.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, luckily, Villa had to be very, very patient, and they actually, you know, they did give it a good go once they got the first one. You kind of thought, right, that'll settle us. We should be okay.
After the goal, Villa did start to put pressure on, and they got a sort of a series of corners. And Carlos was getting involved with Zanka. Now I'll get on to why he's called Zanka in a minute, but he. Carlos was told to stop pushing him basically before the corner was taken, but then once the corner was taken, Zanka just basically wrapped Carlos up like in a bear hug and just fell to the ground, trailing him down. And of course, somehow the referee manages to give a free kick to Brentford. So you're just, it's only in replays that you look at that and go, that's a penalty. I mean, that's a definite penalty, considering that the same penalty's been given a few times, even over the weekend.
It was a weird little subplot that actually through the first half, that every time the ball went in the Villa penalty area, the ref just kind of played to it. But it was clearly a preordained tactic by Brentford that if there's any contact, you go down. The goalie goes up, he goes down. And then if anything gets given against you, you put three or four men around the referee, and because you know none of them are going to get booked, which if my understanding of the rules is right, that's just bad refereeing. You stamp that out the first time it happens.
But you also thought that actually the ref's letting it go a bit here, which can be a positive.
Sometimes, so, when it's consistent.
But yeah, this is the thing. It's just consistency across the board. Now, if there's one thing Villa have been really bad at, and you want to know why, and that's the start of the second half. You know, the question mark is what actually happens at halftime? Why have we been so poor?
And Watkins admitted as much after the game.
Yeah.
He said, we are poor at the start of the second half. They know it. They're not addressing it. But
obviously it was something that's going through their mind, because they started off fast and furious, and it was a great moment. This is probably the highlight of the day.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're looking at Rodgers thinking, actually, he's got attributes he didn't realise that he had. And from the last few performances, you're thinking, actually, he replaces Ramsey in the aggregate pretty well in terms of driving us up the field.
Physicality and height.
We actually recorded the main show that we put out was actually me saying, I don't think we're going to see Ramsey this season. And they were like,
and literally 48 hours later, he was gone.
Yeah, sorry about that, Ramsey.
We just had a feeling, didn't he, when he trained with the squad ahead of Wolves, yeah, and then wasn't seen again. He thought, he's broken down again.
Because, you know, even if he comes back, he's going to take, you know, it normally takes about five games to get up to speed, and it's too late in the season for him. And this is why the likes of Zaniola and Duran and Rodgers are getting game time now, because they need to be up and at it in the business end. We're in, you know, knockout rounds of a European tournament, and we're fighting for every point now in the league. But the goal was sublime, and you thought, hello there, Mr. Rodgers.
Great move, great finish, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Obviously, Emery's seen this in him to go after him, but technically he's a lot better than I thought he was, or a lot better
great
than
off
he
both
looks.
Feet, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, that's the old cliche, isn't it? Big, good feet for a big man.
Yeah, well, that switch from his right foot to his left foot to finish it was a bit like Foden's switch against Villa during the week.
Yeah.
Switching one foot down into the corner. But at that point, you had to think that the game was over. It just wasn't going to be Brentford's day, because, of course, the way the first half ended, Brentford were in a dangerous counter-attack, and the referee just blows up as they've just crossed the line, you know, two against one against Villa. I mean, time was up. It was well over the limit, but it was just unnecessary again from the referee. Just,
I think Phil's cut us off. We're trying to celebrate Morgan Rogers' great moment. Phil Shaw's not having any of it. He's just moved straight on.
Yeah, well, I know what's coming. That's why.
I thought.
Well, that's why I wanted to just linger on Rogers for another half hour, and then just close the show out.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought, you know, at 2-0 with the way Brentford.
Sorry, back to Rodgers. I don't want to go into this 3-goal fucking capitulation. Just finally on Rodgers, I thought, actually, the future's bright there. It was like a little tick in the plus column for the, you know, the future beyond the end of this.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Season. Right. Whoever wants to lead into what happened, go for it.
I think you'll have to mention first, I mean, the thing about the capitulation that was such a surprise was it wasn't like Brentford got an instant goal back as soon as Villa made it 2-0. Because, I mean, we've seen that happen many times. Yeah. And that changes the complexion of the game. There was a good 13 minutes for Villa to, you know, settle, get control, bring it, you know, settle into the game, kill the game off at 2-0. It took them right until the 59th minute, and then it was probably one of the freakiest goals you'll ever see. I mean, Villa, the authors of their own misfortune, out in Villa's right-hand side. But the way that the finish went in, Zanka's finish, you'll never see that again.
It was just...
The way it happened was the cross comes in. I mean, for
who
some
blaming?
Reason...
Who are we blaming, Phil?
It's one of these ones that you just wonder how it happened. I mean, you've Dean out... Dean was still on the right-hand side at right-back position.
He's covering, wasn't he?
Covering from a previous phase of play. And you have too many Villa players out in the right, and still Reguilon gets past them and gets a cross in. The cross comes in, and you suddenly look, and Torres is left marking three Brentford players.
Oh, it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, one of which is Zanka. And you wonder, now Brentford, for a start, for a team that should be dead and buried, why have they got three big players attacking at the back post? It just seemed to be a sort of circumstance of events there. And then it comes back in, the cross, and Zanka swings his right leg at it to try and put it into one corner. It hits him on his standing left leg and goes into the opposite corner. I mean, when a goal like that goes in, warning bells start. I mean, Zanka is a bit of a history with Villa because his real name is Matthias Jorgensen, but Johan Lang called him Zanka because he reminded him of the Cool Runnings film, the character Zanka in it.
What, so he changed his name?
Yeah, and he goes by his nickname, Zanka.
Is this official?
I do that on the shirt.
It is official, but things quickly went like a bobsled downhill for Villa after that.
Yeah.
You told that story just to get that segue in.
I did.
Well done.
Yeah. See, I can execute a plan on like a flipping Austin McPhee free kick. I get to the finish.
Yeah, sorry, going back, if you've got that many players out on that Villa right-hand side, you've got to stop the cross.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a case of, you know, we used to be really guilty of ball watching, and there seemed to be a lot of people being drawn in and people just leaving the man. Nobody was taking the man, being responsible for the man.
The second goal came along 2 minutes later. I mean, Reguilon again, he burned the Villa byline. He beat Konza for pace and he puts in I wouldn't even say a good cross. He puts in a decent cross in the in area. And this is the strange one. Paul Torres just doesn't compete. Now, he's in the wrong side. That's Carlos's side. But Torres is there. He doesn't compete. And then Bueno manages to do an acrobatic sort of Darius Vassell-style volley into the net. And that's two each. But you're wondering, why are you not ahead of Torres? I mean, just get something on it. Anything. Don't be so reactive rather than proactive. Just stop the danger. Just do something.
But also, there's a thing about it. This is the one that Konsa should have cut it out or made more of an effort. I'm not convinced by Konsa in terms of breakneck effort. You know, like when you're a fullback, you're kind of diving in to stop the cross. Konsa kind of sticks a leg out. I mean, Konsa and Torres, I'm not totally convinced in terms of their man marking either. I've got to admit, and I've mentioned this before.
Well, I don't think they're thoroughbred natural defenders. They are ball-playing centre-backs. And it's two poor goals. I mean, as I was going to say before, you know, at 2-0, you think, just manage the game. It wasn't like Brentford had been knocking and you thought, oh, it's, you know, this is coming. You know, when, as Phil said, you know, when you can see the bizarre goal like that, a bit of alarm bells go off. But actually, at that point, you look at the pitch and the dugout and you go, right, who's taking this by the scruff of the neck? This is where you want, you know, your captain or your senior players to step up and go, right, we've let them in the game here. Now we have to put our foot on their head and we have to kill them, which we kind of did in games earlier in the year, if you remember.
Getting violent.
Brighton got a goal back. West Ham. No, fuck them.
You got to put your foot on their head and kill them.
Yeah. Yeah. But you do just you know, you can kill the game by passing it or just go and get the next goal.
It's a bit of a harsh metaphor, but how do you do this?
You take control. You take possession.
Take control of the game. Yeah. And emotionally take control as well. And Villa don't do that very well, which leads us into that point. I think we jokingly called it after the game, like Villa and their clusterfucks of conceding goals in bursts. And it's this horrible theme that's developing in the second half of the season where the first one comes, the second one comes soon after. And in our case, in this game, like at Old Trafford, the third one came soon after that.
Because it goes way back. It goes way back to pre-season, doesn't it? Newcastle, exactly. Brentford in the USA.
First day of the season at Newcastle.
Yeah, Liverpool at Anfield.
And then you had sort of, you know, like Newcastle, Chelsea in the Cup, Man United, even Forest at home. We nearly made a
Luton away. I mean, it plays out in many different ways, doesn't it? And if you concede a cluster in a game against a tough team like the Liverpool game or Newcastle, you lose the game essentially. But also, you know, we've played crap teams. No disrespect, but in
Forest weren't in the game, were they?
Forest home game, Luton away, where we're making it real hard work, a winning games. Luton should have been done and dusted. We needed to last minute winner to get that one out of the bag. Forest, we were cruising against them. Ended up 4-2 when, you know, it should have been
4-0.
Yeah, much easier game. And here, you know, against Brentford, I mean, this game should have been done and dusted. They'd hardly kicked the ball.
Yeah.
And it's worrying because in a lot of sports, you know, you look at the NFL, defense wins the Super Bowl. You can be expansive and, you know, have a fantastic offense, but ultimately when you boil it down, there's going to come a game, probably in the playoffs, where you'll get shut down and then you'll need your defense to hold you in there. And the same in the Premier League. Manchester United had a great defense when they dominated in the 90s. Liverpool had a great defense when they dominated in the 80s and recently.
Those Jose Mourinho Chelsea teams.
Yeah.
They were impenetrable.
You've always
seen Milan in the 90s. That was a dynasty. It was like the best, probably the best back four we've ever seen in European football.
You've got to have a pragmatism when it comes to your back line. Compare it to like Newcastle under Kevin Keegan. Free scoring. Amazing to watch. Great. But when it came to the crunch, didn't get over the line. One fuck all.
Arsenal, more recently, to a certain extent.
George Graham's 1-0 to the Arsenal, which was one of their main song, because if they scored, the game was over.
Yeah.
And this is what is concerning about this team. But the weird thing is, and I put this out in social media, at the end of last season under Emery, I mean, we had like six clean sheets in the space of a couple of months, March and April. And if we went ahead, we could close out games, you know, like champs, really good. And we didn't concede hardly anything. You know, Martinez was racking up the clean sheets. Now, it's like a throwback to, you know, the Lambert years or something.
And this is the thing I talked about earlier with trust. You just think, we're going to gift you something. And it's up to the opposition if you take the route back into the game. But Villa just switched off three times and the ball ends up in the net three times. And you just think, you sat there scratching your head, and Emery's doing the same, and you're like, what the hell are you doing in such an important game?
Going back to Konsa and Torres, you know, it sounds like we were being harsh on them. I mean, but they've kind of made their name of actually, you know, playing it out the back as opposed to their defensive, blue-collar defensive attributes. I mean, I think Longley is our best centre-back in terms of positional sense and being that last-ditch man.
Well, he's a defender. You know, Torres is a ball-playing centre-back.
Yeah. So this is the thing. You lose a little in one column, you gain something in the other. And as we've said about Konsa, his best version of himself when he's playing alongside like an attack dog like Mings, it's a good combo.
And he's great at sort of ground duels. He's one who got some of the best stats in the country for
one-on-one,
which is why you think at right back you should be sort of cleaning up, actually.
There's definitely some issues amongst that back four as a four. I mean, because they haven't played enough games together and they should be bedded in more. But they're always like bitching about things to each other and at each other.
And, is there the potential of, obviously, I suppose we can slip in now is probably as good a time as any, you know, the protection they're getting in front, potentially.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing is, you know, when I put up the old, what is the difference between now and the end of last season? Obviously, you know, you got Mings. The Mings-Konsa centre-back partnership was pretty key.
Yep.
But as people said, well, you know, Kamara's out. And you think, well, yeah, that's a good point. But then, you know, you dig a little deeper and you think, well, actually, Kamara's always out, isn't he? He played 20, started 21 games last season. He appeared once Gerrard left. you feel sorry for Gerrard to a certain extent because he never really got to play him. But he played 20 games this season. So it's pretty much the same. Came on as a sub 50%, man. He's played pretty much the same amount of games. And you've also got Gerrard tax last season as well. So, you know, most fans would say the Gerrard period was a poor period and, you know, you're getting beat 3-0 by Fulham, etc. But even that's factored in last season. And we are now, with six games to go, we've conceded 3 more goals than last season. Now, we've scored more, so you can say, well, the balance has shifted a bit. The focus is more
and we're attacking, a different team.
Which is fair enough. It's a different team, which is fair enough. But we're gifting goals. It's not as if we're playing difficult teams and our style means, you know, we're going to concede, but we'll score more. And we played Brentford here. We should have beaten them and not have conceded because they never got a sniff.
Brentford weren't great.
Burnley, Forest, games we've cruised in, as in the ascendancy, and then conceded, like, but silly goals. These aren't like being picked apart by
a great move
play.
Or a worldie or
no,
something.
It's just letting your man go.
It's mentality. It's concentration.
But it's also formation and organisation, because as a team, I don't think we're defending, because crosses are being whipped in from that touchline just before you get to the edge of the 18-yard box, those kind of diagonal balls, because teams know that positionally, you know, the zonal marking is so laxed. And the communication is poor. And we've been a victim of so many goals from crosses. I mean, the Manchester United scenario when we were 2-0 up is a prime example of that. And also the game at Villa Park against them as well.
Lackadaisical kind of sums it up. And you know, to put it back to the game, of course, when the third goal goes in, it's just everyone's just shell-shocked. But there's, luckily for Villa, there's actually still plenty of time to kind of get yourself out of the mess, which is...
You're shell-shocked, but you're not actually surprised, are you?
No.
No, not at all. No, when the second one comes, you think they'll get a third here. You almost kind of know what's coming.
I mean, if I tattooed myself every time Villa over the years had flaked out, or even this season has flaked out whenever they should be winning games, I don't think there'll be a patch of skin left on me for a new one next week.
You'd be getting into Bergheim, though, Phil.
You needed reaction, but the thing is, if it was 2-2, you think we can still win this game if we just can sort it out and get some kind of grip on this game. Their third goal, I thought, we're not going to win this now. It's a bridge too far, because the players are, they're shocked, but also they're pissed off.
They're panicking.
And Emery was getting desperate. And just at the time we were going to bring on, do a triple substitution, we got a goal, which we probably deserved in terms of the overall game and the effort we put in to get that equaliser.
And fair play to Watkins, to be honest, because actually, you know, Bailey had a pretty difficult afternoon. I think Brentford dealt with him well. They doubled down on him, but he gets his crossing, doesn't he, from the sort of right on the byline. He takes a little nick on the way through, loops up, and he rises above everyone. It's a great header.
That was another moment where we'd actually deserve the look because of the effort that we put in there. That little nick basically set it up for Watkins. If that nick didn't happen, there's no way that happened.
Yeah.
we get a goal. A bit like the Bailey goal against Manchester City, where it goes in, and but we deserved, I mean, we deserved more than one goal in that game.
It should have been ahead already. But
that was a bit where, you know, that was a classic example, well, two examples of where you actually deserve the look that you kind of work for yourself there.
Yeah,
and for all the criticism of Watkins of not stepping up, this was probably one of the first games this season where he tried to drag Villa over the line. He did his best to try and get them that win.
He was the talisman in that game.
Yeah, right? And that's probably why the comments that he's made in the press have come out afterwards when he is gutted that it's happened again.
And I think they were very, very fair comments.
Yeah.
To sort of question the mentality of his
big
side.
Big dog mentality.
And when we've been, you know, calling, you know, using phrases like, you know, shit the bed, get your big boy pants on, all these sort of things. And it's true. You can word it in different ways, but it's the same thing. It's you find a way to get over the line. Strangely, actually, because of course we scored on 80 minutes. And I thought, well, before and after the game, but during the game, I thought, right, we're going to have 10 minutes plus at least sort of 5-6 minutes here to actually fashion a good chance, which, you know, there's the Dina one, but I wouldn't class that as a big chance. It's kind of, I mean, if it goes in with an overhead kick like that, the stadium erupts.
Yeah. Thought it was but in, it, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I actually thought, though, when you see it back, he's got time there. He can take a touch and then smash it, and he'd have fancied him to hit the target. I think if it hits the target from that range, it's in.
Yeah. There was a Konsa chance. Konsa had a chance to redeem himself with a header, but he 50-50'd.
Yeah, it was the head. I thought that was the better chance, and he just got his radar all wrong there, didn't he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, when it's up that height in the air and it comes down to Dean, he's probably in two minds. He's thinking, I have to take this early in case it's blocked. So he goes for that. I mean, he hit it too well. If he'd have hit it into the ground, it would probably went into the net.
Yeah, it's a great effort, to be fair to him. And it's a shame, actually, because I actually thought he was one of our better players on the day.
Definitely the closest we got. I mean, but at least we had a go, and it wasn't until a few seasons ago that I never saw 5 minutes of pressure in front of the halt where you get corner after corner. At least, you know, at least that was happening again, which is, you know, symbolises that you've got a team that can stick it on their opposition and go for it.
I mean, as Emery said, you basically dominated the game for sort of 75, 80 minutes, but you've had 9 minutes of chaos and you've completely shit the bed because of it. But as I was saying, you know, when you equalise with 10 minutes to go, and in the end it turns out you had 10 minutes plus 7, nearly 8 minutes of stoppage time, you've got 18 minutes to fashion a really good gilt-edged chance. I think Watkins' comments are more aimed at the defensive stuff, but I actually think at the other end of the field, you look at the top three, Tottenham, maybe United, I think Newcastle have done it, with that level of pressure and they've got the fans sort of pulling you on to score and suck the ball into the net. I think a team with its big boy pants on, they calmly get on the ball and they fashion the chance to win the game, and we didn't. You know, I wouldn't have said with any of the chances we thought he should have scored that, or we didn't pepper the goal. The goal.
I thought we were a bit too casual, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we didn't have that kind of you have the patience, but you have that intent to move them around and go, right, we need some real quality here, either on the ball or a delivery in, and it just wasn't there. But I think a team who is where we are, if you a team aspiring for top four in that position, they find a way. You know, there was the thing at the end and it drove me mad. There was a couple of occasions where Martinez was trying to get Villa moving quickly and his distribution, I thought, was off. He's earned the right to have the odd off day, Martinez, but with his ball at feet, some of his distribution was poor, and there was one right at the end where he's tried to smash it down Zaniolo's throat, and you think that's either going to come straight back, or nine times out of ten in that position, Zaniolo gives away a foul, which he did. It wasn't the percentage play, and I don't think Villa did the percentage play in the end where you forced that really great opportunity that you think we can't miss from here. We didn't do it. We didn't sort of either have the mentality or the calmness in our game, or even maybe the tactical thing to go, right, this is, you know, straight after training, this is what we've got to do when we've got a low block and there's 10 men behind the ball and we need to force the issue. It felt like we didn't know.
Most fans at this kind of stage of the game, especially when you're deeper into injury time, you're just praying for one chance, one clear-cut chance. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we really got that as you're talking about there.
No.
All we did get was the sting in the tail for Louise getting that yellow.
Oh, God, we were going to have to go there eventually, weren't we?
Yeah, well, I mentioned that in the Villa news when I was thinking about
we just
on
seem
that
to have
situation.
A knack, don't we, Villa, of when we have a bad day, it never rains, but it pours, and we just seem to be able to compound our own misery.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we deserve to win that game by any stretch of the imagination after that capitulation, but
no.
At least have Douglas Luiz for the next two games when you're missing your other deep sitter.
Are you becoming depleted?
Yeah, this is why there shouldn't be... excuses and happiness about, oh, well, you know, as we said, the negative positivity or the toxic positivity about saying, oh, it's actually all right because we are fifth or sixth, if it gets even worse. But I think fifth will be where we probably end up if you look at what's happened in recent weeks.
Yep. And if that's enough, brilliant. It's cause for celebration, of course.
Yeah.
By hook or by crook, if you end up in the Champions League, brilliant. That said, we'd actually have to qualify, I think. But that's for another day.
My main concern at the moment, I've got to admit, is winning that fucking Europa Conference League. And
yeah, teams who concede goals in clusters don't tend to fare very well in cups.
Yeah, this is why, like, you know, Fiorentina and, you know, Inter Milan, not spectacular teams.
Nope.
In the context of the Champions League or, you know, in Europe per se, but it's just that Italian mentality and that defensive structure gets them there. You know, gets them
and
to
they
the
don't
final.
Feel any need to be sexy or entertaining. It's like they're so annoyingly functional at times, these teams. Even,
well,
dare I say, like,
well,
West
yeah,
Ham,
but we're not talking about changing the whole ethos approach of the team. I'm just talking about defensive organisation being a priority here. And we had it. We had it under Emery at the end of last season. And you're thinking, that's why I was, you know, bullish for this season. It's like, well, we know how to defend here. And that's 75% of the problem solved. And to be so flimsy at the back now, I mean, you know, we were saying that the Wolves win was a good sign. You had that world-class save from Martinez, which you expect one every game to keep that clean sheet. But you thought, well, that was a step in the right direction. But the Brentford one was like, ah, for fuck's sake.
Well, it shows how little intensity there was in that Wolves attack, I suppose, in the end.
Yeah, but it's when I say for fuck's sake, it's in the context of Europe, because we're not going to get... If we get through Lille, which... Not going to be easy. They're better than Brentford, put it that way.
Yeah.
Fenerbahce, you know, if we play them, we actually are having to hold on to, let's say, a one-goal lead across the leg, two legs. That's going to get fiery.
Well, I don't think we're set up to contain or to, you know, we're set up to go and win games, and that's fine if you can do that. But you know, Emery's whole ethos is around control, and I think we're losing control in games far too often.
This is against Brentford.
Yeah, you're losing control.
Who offered nothing?
You're losing control in games where you have 100% control. It's not that you're losing control in games where, you know, it's a back and forth. It's, I mean, the Arsenal,
you're competing.
Yeah, the Arsenal victory where it was 1-0 and it was backs to the wall. They had zero control on that, but they had grit and they knew what they were doing. I mean, this is almost like when Villa are at their weakest whenever they're in complete control. It is. It's like a casualness just creeps in. And you wonder if, I mean, Ashley Young hasn't had a great season for Everton. If he was still there to shout at the rest of the team, Buendia, you know, ratty round the ball, doing things like that there. These are the qualities that have just been lost in the team. And you can sort of see where it's coming in now. Because I don't see...
It's intangible things, isn't it? It's the non-stats related qualities that you need. I mean, Young used to bring in abundance.
Yeah, can you think of any player in that Villa team that goes and gives instruction to another Villa player and they take it and do it, you know, with no questions asked? And they're almost like a team of equals. It's like, no, I'm not doing that. And that's probably what you see in that defence when there's you know, bitching and backfighting at each other.
Yeah, McGinn as a captain, not in terms of effort and talisman figure, but more like on-field organisation, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I think I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. There was a really interesting piece written by the Ajax lads. I think it was before the second leg, because they were crediting Henderson with that first game where they were very well organised. And a few people had chimed in, and people who played with him in England and et cetera, et cetera. And they said, Henderson, for all his faults and people don't like him and he's very unfashionable as a player, on the pitch, he's like a coach. He walks his team through the game. So he's what he might lack in technicality or whatever. He's like the kind of, you stand there, we go here, we go together, da 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 da. And he's basically just cajoling his team for 90 minutes and he gets these young players through the game. I wonder who does that for Villa, if anyone. Probably no one.
Well, funny, like I'm just mentioning Clement Longley being the best, like the defender in terms of positional sense. But you saw him, he's had moments in game where you've seen him have a go at Cash and Konsa in terms of where they should be. So he knows, you know, where they should be. And that's the thing that's disturbing is if you had a, you know, you need a captain to also chime in and tell people where to be. But you think Martinez would be a bit more vocal as well.
I think you need it further forward.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about that, getting the defensive line right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry, when I said I didn't mean to disrespect Brentford, but we're talking about a team that previously had lost 11 of their 15 away games this season. They were there for the taking.
Eight games, had they, or something ridiculous. And they had their depleted back line. They didn't have their star striker playing.
But just their record, in a way, just to crystallise you to why I'm saying Brentford were there for the taking. Start of the game, apart from the three goals that Brentford scored.
Yeah, this came from the Birmingham Mail's John Townley. He says, On only three occasions in the Premier League's 31-year history has a team finished in the top four having conceded more than 50 goals. With six games left to play, Villa have conceded 49. And that, as we've said previously, that's three more than the whole last season, which had the Gerrard tax. So they're going to have to overturn some history if they want to finish in the top four, because they're definitely going to concede more than 50 goals this season.
There's definitely the reason why we're up there and Spurs are up there is because certain teams aren't on their game this season, like your Uniteds and your Chelseas. This is an opportunity. And you can see, you know, some people will say we're kind of punching above our weight here. And I'm, when you see things like this happen, and in other games where we've shipped goals, in, you know, in games we've actually ended up winning still, you can see we aren't the top four team, if you know what I mean. It's a bit like Newcastle last season. That's how they got in the top four, because there isn't a depth of good teams at the moment. They've got their, you know, shit sorted out.
Yeah, you haven't got the big six sort of slugging it out amongst themselves, and it's, you know, whoever doesn't finish in the top four, you know, sort of five and six, it's a disaster.
It's rarely you get the whole six at the same time, but there's normally at least four, you know, really
four or
good
five
teams. Fancy Premier League player, Villa player of the game. Pretty obvious this one.
Yeah, it is obvious. That's
none of the defenders, that's for sure.
No, Ollie Watkins with 13 points.
Sorry, I'm getting my digs in here every opportunity. Right, big thank you, by the way, to all of my Old Man Said members, as usual, and special thanks to Alex Dowden, Tyler Orne as well, for joining as an annual member. If you join as an annual member, you get 10% free, which is just over a month, by supporting My Old Man Said podcast. Get ad-free shows, as the football podcast gods would want it. You get extra shows, and also entrance into the 24/7 Match Club, which we also do live shows on. That the next one will be the Arsenal game, so please do join us for that. Please do go to myoldmansaid.com to get more details there by clicking the membership link. Right, let's finish quickly on some media muppetry. Has there been any, Mr. Phil Shaw?
Well, now that Villa are out of the top four and out of the eyes of the press, I had to look elsewhere for some media muppetry. So we've went to South America.
God, you travelled far there, didn't you?
I did.
Just to get this snippet.
Who's one of the only players in the world you probably don't want to annoy publicly in the media? I think Lionel Messi would be right up there, even in his later years. But this is exactly what's happened after the first leg of the CONCACAF Champions Cup. And it was done by Monterrey head coach Fernando Ortiz.
Is that the opposition?
That's the opposition, yes. Against Messi's Inter Miami.
I thought it was Suarez's Inter Miami.
Well, it's both's Inter Miami. It's the Barcelona retirement home. There's audio of Sanchez discussing a locker room confrontation has been leaked through Fox Sports MX. And this is the one that got me. This is him describing Lionel Messi. He goes, "The dwarf was possessed. He had the face of the devil. He put his fist next to my face and says, 'Who do you think you are?' But because I didn't look at him and I was looking away, I never answered back, and it made things worse." And then he goes one further about the Inter Miami manager, Tata Martino. He goes, "What a poor dummy. I had him in front of me telling him, 'Fool, you gonna cry? Fool, you gonna cry? What a dummy.'" Not a great idea to wind up Messi, but he doubled down on it because he did a public video apology to the media that was very sort of respectful to Tata Martino, but he just completely left out Messi. So obviously there's a bit of spice for the second leg of that, which Monterrey are 2-1 up in.
South American influence, isn't
it? And just to bring it home, to finish it off, anybody that was watching in hope about the Spurs-Nottingham Forest game, which didn't end very well, would have noticed the Sky Sports graphic about Arsenal and Aston Villa the next game, putting up a picture of Douglas Luiz. Either they're inept or they were just rubbing it in.
Hopefully they know something we don't.
He's had that yellow card rescinded. No, that was a joke. He hasn't. Douchebag. Right. Feel like we're in limbo now, because we need to know what happens in that Lille doubleheader.
And all the other doubleheaders from the looks of it.
Because if we get knocked out of that, oh my gosh, There would be several camps, I think. There would be the camp where they go, well, if we finish fifth, that's good. I'd have taken that at the start of the season. But my camp is, I've got no problem with fifth, but I want to win this cup. I want younger Villa fans to experience Villa winning something. This is as close as we've got in terms of realistic. I mean, we've obviously been in finals, but we've been in finals against teams that were always going to wipe the floor with us. I think it's mentality. Emery likes to say it, but the team really need to step up. And Watkins is right. We need to get that big team mentality, because your Liverpool's, Manchester City's. Can we mention Arsenal's? That? No, we can't really, can we?
They haven't won trophies though in recent years. Yeah, they've not been great, but they've still been winning FA Cups, etc.
Yeah, Martinez won
them. It's not Europe though, is it?
But they've played in a Champions League final in living memory, unlike us.
They didn't win it though, did they? And the last time they played Bayern Munich, they shat the bed like they had diarrhea. 10-2 on aggregate?
Something like that. So they need to...
Yeah. So let's keep the big boy teams as Liverpool and Manchester City at this stage. They would be looking at this draw and who's left in this European tournament and just thinking, if we don't win this, we've dropped a bollock here. And Lille is, I think for me, it's the tricky one. If we're going to get beaten here, and the most likely stage of this tournament would be now, I think. If we get through Lille, I think we're going all the way, boys.
They're a good side, aren't they? And they're in form at the minute.
Yeah, and they've got a few ballers as well.
Yeah, they've pace.
And they can cross a ball.
Oh, shit.
And I think the way the draw has worked out, I think we're putting ourselves under pressure to get results at home, which you're going to have anyway. But I think because it's the first leg at home,
it's
the thing, as I said earlier, about trusting Villa. Do I trust Villa to go away with a 1-0 lead and get the job done? If I'm honest right now, no, I don't.
Yeah, and you're not going to get the drama of the second leg at home, which is unfortunate. The fact that we've both fixtures potentially, if we make it to the second one, we'll be at home first. But those are the cards that are dealt, and we've got to play a winning hand from them. Until Lille, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.